What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast that could yet be abandoned after 9 minutes. Coming up, about last night, we look back on the midweek league and cup action. Charlton keep up with the Joneses, but Port Vale are on the lookout for a new manager again. There's previews as Tractor Boys look to step on the throttles, and we hear from Russell Martin. Sponsored by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. It's Matt Davis, Adams, Adrian Clark and Sam Parkin back in your ears to talk all things Football League, but also a little bit of FA Cup as well. How are you doing, Clarky?
Yeah, watcha. Yeah, all right. Yeah, all good.
Sam, you okay?
Yeah, good, thanks. How's everyone doing?
Yes, can't complain because no one will listen. Before we get to our opening gambit, let me remind you about the offer from our friends at Quinbet. They've enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of the pod. It's 18 plus and remember, always gamble responsibly. Okay, here's our opening gambit for this week. It is inspired by Neil Mopay, the world's greatest S-Houser, having a little pop at Kyle Walker on the pitch on Monday night as Brentford were beaten by Manchester City. Kyle Walker did not take it well. Sam, who used to wind you up when you were on the pitch or maybe a teammate, what's the best on-pitch sledging that you've heard?
Too many to mention, really, like in terms of individuals. But funnily enough, kind of in the aftermath of that incident, I was immediately taken back to a place, and I'm going to name and shame him because he's doing really well. So, like, this isn't going to make no difference to his career prospects. It's Barry Hunter, who I think is Liverpool chief scout now. Yeah. And if Clarkie came across him, or certainly he's
played with him briefly at Southend.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. And he was a centre half playing for Rushden and Diamonds at the time. And I was losing my hair at a rapid rate. Although I wasn't at the stage where I was going to admit that and shave it off because I was a young man, and obviously I'm sure listeners will concur, it's quite a traumatic experience. So I was hanging on for dear life, and he was just basically going, you need to cut your hair off, you're losing your hair. And it was a wet day as well, but you know, just like calmly and just like repetitively, and obviously I was absolutely fuming, but couldn't really bite. But like, did have a proper effect on me, like probably after the game. But I think actually Rory Fallon, who was more aggressive than me as a centre forward, got him engulfed in like a bit of a battle. And I think Rory like either clobbered him in that game or got sent off in the reverse fixture. So Rory took on the mantle anyway. But yeah, that one was quite conniving and quite clever, really, because he definitely got under my skin.
Yeah, I like that. To the point. And specific and painful. And there's something very nice about a man called Hunter now being a chief scout or head of recruitment. Adrian, what you got for me?
There is, isn't there? I'm quite the opposite. I've never really got chatting to that many players. I was quite quiet back in the day on the pitch, just got on with it. But I do remember there's one, and I don't know whether it was sledging or whether it was genuine advice. But it really, I'll never forget it. And it did get under my skin. It was Arsenal against Tottenham in a youth team game. Obviously, it was a big game, a bit fiery. And I was up against a lad called Danny Hill, who was a fantastic talent, went on to play for their first team. Just during the game, he kept whispering in my ear, what's happened to you, mate? What's happened to you? So what do you mean? Knocking it out of you, aren't they? Knocking it out of you. Don't listen to him, mate. Like that. He's basically saying, because Arsenal were very... quite strict in terms of what they wanted from their winger. It was all about hard work and pressing and everything. But I was always a flair player, and I'd known Danny growing up. And he was basically saying, they're turning you into an ordinary player, son. Like, don't let them do it to you. And I've never forgot it. And I think he might have been genuinely trying to help me, but it was an excellent piece of sledging because I couldn't really concentrate on the game. Loved it.
Magnificent. Let's talk about some midweek action next. FA Cup replays took place on Tuesday night. There's a couple on Wednesday as well, but that's when we're recording, so we can't tell you about those, although there's only one Championship side involved. There were two, Clarkey, in Coventry. One-sided game this, Coventry 4, Sheffield Wednesday 1. Gives you a chance to throw some more love on Callum O'Hare, because he was a star man here. Two goals and an assist.
Yeah, he was great. Really calm finishes. I don't know if he was the actual star man. I think there were good performances all over. Casey Palmer had a particularly good night. And
it's his FA Cup, isn't it, this season, Casey Palmer?
It is, yeah. And look, obviously, they've played Sheffield Wednesday a lot lately. He's had to deal with the fallout of that racist incident. So for him to score a worldie, and it was a great goal, Maisie dribble, and then he drives it into the bottom corner. And then he produced a brilliant assist for O'Hare. He slipped the pass into the box. I thought that was it was a really pleasing night, I would imagine, for Casey Palmer, who handled it really well. He didn't go over the top in terms of his celebration. So really, really good night for him, for O'Hare. And Jay De Silva was great at left back. And Coventry march on to face Maidstone. So they've got a great chance of reaching the quarterfinals now, which would be a tremendous achievement. As for Sheffield Wednesday, though, second mauling in a matter of days. They let in 3 goals in 8 minutes against Coventry. This after conceding 4 goals in 12 minutes against Huddersfield. That's pretty unforgivable. That is alarming, really. I think if I'm Danny Roll, that is tough for him to deal with, because it shows that his team lack backbone. They're brittle. They collapse like a pack of cards. So, yeah, big game. I'm going to be there on Friday against Birmingham. That's a biggie. Because if there's another collapse, the fans just won't have it.
Yeah, they haven't won in the league since New Year's Day. They were on a Danny Roll. All of a sudden, they're out of the cup and they're 8 points from safety. Leeds came through their replay against Plymouth. We're going to talk about Leeds later. Good to see Jimmy's boy, Crescencio Somerville, on the score sheet here, though. Southampton 3, Watford 0. Before we hear from Russell Martin, Sam, a word on Watford. They've only won 2 of their last 10, and those are against Chesterfield and QPR. A classic case of one of those championship teams you stop paying attention to for a moment and think, oh, they're in good form. They might pinch a playoff place. And then, oh dear, it's all dropped off a little bit for them of late.
Yeah, maybe a little bit of a reality check last night, because just, you know, looking at the teams, they looked a little bit stronger in terms of the amount of changes that Southampton made. So Southampton's resis, really, winning at a canter. I think short in the final third would probably be my take on Watford. Lack real goal threats. But despite that, I just think he's done a pretty good job, Valerian Ismail, in kind of, I don't know, stabilising the on-field business, getting the supporters pretty much on board. But yeah, it's a difficult spell. And I think they're in a bit of a transitional period, Watford. I'm not entirely sure that they're going to have a brilliant second half to the season, but I think they need to stick with the manager. And he probably needs to be backed. They didn't make any signings, I don't think, in the window. I think they were close to a couple, but nothing got over the line. So, it's been very active, hasn't it, in terms of transfer activity over the last few years, but it hasn't been under Valerian Ismail more recently. So I hope they stick with him, because he's done a lot of good work. And yeah, that's probably a bit of a reality check, losing so comfortably at Southampton, but we know how good they are.
Yeah, absolutely flying at the moment. Let's hear from Russell Martin then. Adrian caught up with him after the weekend win against Rotherham and asked him how long their club record unbeaten run will last.
As long as the players want to keep running, keep learning, keep growing, keep fighting for each other, keep showing the courage they do with the ball, it'll be up to the players, really. So they've been amazing. We'll concentrate on ourselves one game at a time. Genuinely, I really, like, no one's going to get carried away. We're in second. It's the tightest race I've been for years. There's 4 teams fighting for the same thing. And it is exciting to be part of. But we just have to stay really hungry and keep doing what we're doing. And the games are relentless this month. Take care of that ourselves and see where it takes us. I don't even know the team for Tuesday yet, so I definitely haven't got a points tally for the end of the season. I honestly don't know what it's going to take. I know it's going to take being relentless and winning a lot, and we're in a really good place, and I want the players and the supporters and the staff to keep feeling what they're feeling now, because it's the best feeling when you're winning and you're doing it in a certain way that everyone is really proud of and believes in, and hopefully we can keep that going.
Clarky, we clipped off the bit of the interview there where you apologised to him for your comments on his team at the start of the season. how did you find him? I mean, the turnaround from that start of the season has been incredible, and it looks like they're never going to lose again at the moment.
Yeah, no, he's a very amiable bloke. You know, he's very friendly. I was super impressed with his team, as much with the energy as the quality. I think that it was unbelievable. He touched on it there in that little snippet from the chat we had. It was unbelievable, their work rate. It was like watching a Man City, if you know what I mean. When they lose the ball, they're bang, they're on it. They're grafting. That midfield three, really, really hungry. And you could say that about all of the players, really. Excellent movement. The centre-halves were terrific. Because you know what Rotherham are going to throw at you with the long throws and the free kicks, but they dealt with it. Bednarek and Harwood Bellis, and also their passing was wonderful for one of the goals. I think Harwood Bellis clipped one over the top. They've got a lovely range. So yeah, I was super impressed with Southampton, and I think that when I compare them with Leeds, who I've seen quite a lot lately, I think that as a team, Southampton are slightly better with and without the ball than Leeds. But Leeds have maybe the more dangerous match winners in guys like Somerville and Routier, who can just take the game away from a team. So it's going to be some shootout. And I think it will be a shootout between those two now.
Yeah, certainly looking that way. Some big games in League One on Tuesday night. Hell of a 9 minutes, Sam, they had at the Abbey there. Cambridge against Bolton, abandoned after a huge downpour. People always want to find blame here, don't they? And say, well, did the referee not check the weather forecast beforehand? But I don't know. It's easy for me to sit here on Wednesday morning and say these things happen. I'm not a Bolton fan who made the journey down. What's it like for the players when a game gets abandoned that quickly?
Hampton and Richmond was all right. I sat through Hampton and Richmond 0, St Albans City 0.
What made you go there?
Well, it's about 200 yards from my front door. And
love unknown, soccer, don't you? Love
unknown
it.
To me, I walked in. Hope I'm not giving away any secrets of his... I'm not. Glenn Hoddle was there because there was a George Hoddle
On loan from Cambridge,
anchoring the St Albans City midfield. And early doors, I was just like, give it to the Hod, let him lend it. And he was. But he subsided a little bit, as did the standard of the game. I digress. I don't think
did you pay to go in, or did you get a freebie? You like a face around there.
I pay £19 for my ticket. I pay £10 for a pizza from a van, and I had various non-alcoholic lagers as well. Because I'm
£19 for a ticket.
£19, yeah. I'm sure when I moved to Hampton, it was about a tenner. It's gone up with the.
I don't know what to say.
Everything else.
Cost I'm a little living, bit stunned mate. By that. Yeah.
Cost of living. Yeah. I was doing the maths actually, thinking, oh, maybe I should own a non-league club when I heard the attendance go up. Yeah.
It's a good job we're raking it in on this podcast, isn't it?
Exactly. Anyway, no, you can't do anything about the magnitude of the downpour, can you? Surely. I think everyone knew it was going to be wet last night, but it was moving around the country, and Cambridge just got it an hour or two before we did down here in London. But unfortunate for the Bolton fans, absolutely. And probably a little bit of respite, a little bit of good news when they were travelling back to see Hosh Falter at St James's Park in swirling, horrendous conditions, which is pretty much a given down in Devon this time of year, because I certainly had a few games called off when I was there.
Yeah, crazy weather this week. Let's go on to that one then, Clarky. Exeter 2, Peterborough 1. Posh missed the chance to go second in League One. Boy, they really shot themselves in the foot, didn't they? Man sent off and then two own goals. I imagine that away dressing room was a rather somber place, and some paint was stripped off the walls by Darren Fergus.
Oh, I hope. Yeah, I don't know if they would have flown home, and really wouldn't want to fly home last night, would you? So they'd have probably been on a coach getting back in the early hours. That would have been a miserable journey. They did. They obviously, it was naivety from the loanee, Michael Olakibe. He's on loan from Brentford. He's only 19, and he's the right wing, and he'd done all right, I think, at the weekend. But yeah, second yellow. When you're on a yellow card, you can't be going tripping up a player that's running towards your own goal. It's a nailed on second yellow. So he'll learn from that, won't he? I think Ferguson was fuming at his forwards that they wasted some opportunities. He called out Ricky J. Jones actually afterwards and said, can't believe he didn't lay in Randall for a free shot. Basically accused him of being a little bit greedy. So the forwards felt the wrath, but it was two own goals. But really unlucky, you know, that they were brilliant pieces of play from Reece Cole, who's the midfielder. He's got a lovely, lovely left foot for Exeter. Sensational free kick over the wall. I think it might have hit the post and it come off the goalie. And then it's a superb cross. The second guy, actually, it's a right footed player, Rhys Cole. And it's a superb right footed cross into the danger zone. And Katongo is on loan from Manchester City. He's 19 as well. Put it into his own net. So yeah, two great pieces of technique from Rhys Cole won that game for Exeter. But yeah, the Peterborough players will be fuming because they were wasteful.
They sure were. Really big win for Reading, away to playoff contenders Stevenage, moves the Royals out of the bottom four. Sam, do you want me to blow your mind?
Go on.
This was Reading's first midweek away win since February 2021. Three years. We gave the manager some credit, didn't we, when we were talking about the issues off the field. We should give him some more now because they've only lost one in 11 games. Given what they're facing behind the scenes, he's really managed to sort of engender that us against the world spirit for the players that are left, it would seem.
Yeah, definitely. But I think if you look at the team he can put out, it's a good 11, actually. Mm. I mean, the subs are young, and I think that's been, you know, problematic throughout the season, that there's no depth there. And if they're missing a few players, then obviously you're calling upon young lads without experience. But some good players in that side. And defensively, they're really good at the moment. They're not conceding multiple goals in games, so they've got an opportunity of picking up points. So real solid foundation. A little bit of good fortune with the winning goal last night. But, you know, as you say, six wins, six draws from the last 14 games. A bit like Exeter, didn't really see it coming. I mean, Exeter are mid-table over the last 12 games and they couldn't buy a goal, let alone a win under Gary Caldwell. So in terms of what they're doing on the pitch, I think it's been a really good turnaround for both sides. And Reading's games recently as well, 8 points from four games against teams in the top 10. So these aren't games invariably you'd expect them to get anything from. So yeah, really, really good performance last night. I think they limited Stevenage to two shots on target. I don't think they had a great deal on the Reading goal. So a really good away performance, a very defensively strong performance, which you wouldn't have thought was possible given the record over the last couple of years. Who was that against? Just out of mind, Matt. You got that? Or are you just going to throw a stat at me and not give me? No, you haven't got.
Not
it means
job.
Nothing then, really, does it?
Not my job.
On Reading, by the way,
half a stat.
The forward players, we recognise the names, that they're good players, but the back, inexperienced players, three at the back four with 22 or under in this game, Bindon and Bengi and Moller. And is Stevenage away in a swirling wind with rain coming down? That is an astonishing performance in a way, because that is the kind of night where Stevenage rough you up and they chuck those balls into the box and they deal with them better than you do. So to have three of the back four so inexperienced to come through that test with a clean sheet, he's brilliant, actually, I think, anyway. And I think across the last five games, they've only conceded three goals. So, yeah, they've hit on something decent, haven't they, Reading?
Certainly looks that way. And the battle to stay in League One is looking interesting as well. Fleetwood won 2-0 away at Bristol Rovers. Goal in each half for a second consecutive win there. 6 points from safety. Now, we're going to talk more about Fleetwood later. Another disappointing result for Matt Taylor here, Adrian. Looked as though things were starting to look up for him after the back-to-back wins. But getting some consistency has been a bit of an issue. My other note on this game is filthy conditions and non-existent marking.
Yeah, they were bad goals to give away. And I think that was the moan, really, for Matt Taylor afterwards. It was like, we've got to deal with crosses into our box much better. I think he felt maybe that they lost the physical battle, a bit soft, you know, in the air. Again, they've got two youngsters in their back three, Baggett and Kramer. So maybe that was a factor there, I don't know. They've lost three of their last four at home. They've lost five of their last seven. So it is a bad run, really, for Bristol Rovers. They need to arrest this slide. And it doesn't help that with Chris Martin getting himself sent off late on, we didn't really see what it was for. It was sort of a scuffle, wasn't it, inside the goal net. But it was funny because I was travelling with a friend earlier in the week to the Arsenal game, and he's from Norfolk. We were talking about Chris Martin. He said what a loose cannon he was as a young lad, and that he was banned from like nearly every pub in the Norfolk area because he's a little bit of a scrapper. And this isn't.
You've got to give me the name of the place, mate. If you're going to pull that, you've got to give me the name of the place.
What?
That he's banned from. That he was banned
He was
from.
Banned from nearly every pub in Waveney. And he's from Wyndham as well. And well, look, this isn't just me saying it, right? He's been,
no, I know the story. I know the story.
I think
you're a little bit off with your geography.
Okay.
The reason being is that he offered me out once in training at Luton, and I absolutely was so scared.
Was it Beck? Are you thinking of Beckles then? Is that what you're thinking of? Yeah, Beckles. Yeah, I mean they're all quite near to each other in Norfolk. So you've been on the end, the receiving end.
I think he was fresh after the banning order, so I was like, he probably knows his way around a ring at this stage.
But I'd forgotten all this. Yeah, I'd forgotten all this about him. Sort of as a veteran striker, you know, quite a neat and tidy player, isn't he?
I feel a bit bad with dragging his back up.
I mean, I'm just surprised that the red mist seems to come down, because usually with Chris Martin it's all yellow, isn't it? But maybe I don't know as well as I.
I admire the link.
The only League Two game on Tuesday got postponed. Walsall and Morecambe will have to try again. Waterlogged pitch there. All right, let's talk about some new managers next. Right, it's been in the pipeline for a while, but now confirmed Nathan Jones is the new Charlton Athletic manager. It's a long-term contract, announced the club vaguely. Jones said, from my conversations with the board and given the long-term nature of the contract, I can see there's a real appetite to build something here, which I'm really looking forward to being a part of. His first game is at Reading on Saturday after watching from the stands against Derby. Adrian, he says he's turned down other offers. How's he ended up in a League One relegation battle? And this time last year, he was denying Manchester City the quadruple.
Not sure. I think location is quite important. I think he is a real family man. And I think maybe if the location wasn't right for him and his family, that he might have, you know, turned down someone's advances. He's lived there before in Greenwich. I know he enjoyed it there. And I think he's quite grateful for Charlton for sort of being the springboard for his coaching career. That was really his first gig in charge of the 21s back in the day, and he built a reputation there and then went on to Brighton and Luton, and the rest is history. So I think he likes the club. I mean, it's a risky move, isn't it? Because I'm not sure I really have a lot of faith in the ownership, the people that are running the club. And I mean that disrespectfully, but they'd have checkered histories, don't they? You know, Andy Scott, Jim Rodwell and the owners there made a lot of mistakes down the years, and not just at Charlton. So it's a risky move for him. They've only had one win since the 1st of November. No clean sheets in 18. There's work to do, isn't there? They certainly need to toughen up defensively. The goal shouldn't be a problem. Ladapo and May up front and others waiting in the wings. I mean, they should score plenty. But yeah, he's got to give that team a little bit more, or a lot more steel. And as I said in recent podcast, they've got to trim that squad. I mean, they can't really, because it's the transfer window's gone. They have got too many players. That's a job for him moving forward. The other point of interest here is that he's named as manager and not as head coach, which hints that they're going to give him a little bit more power in terms of recruitment moving forward, and maybe in shaping the whole club. I don't think there's much needed to do with the academy. They bring through lots of good players, don't they? But maybe the culture of the club that we've talked about in the past needs changing, and they're giving Jonesy the remit to do that, which I think is quite appealing, I guess, if you're him.
Haven't won a game since the 28th of November. Sam, if you're a Charlton fan, you've got to be absolutely thrilled that you've managed to attract him now.
Yeah, definitely. No, it's a really well-supported club. It's got a great potential, of course. So I think it's a really attractive position. One of few in League One that would have been able to be a draw for Nathan Jones. So no, I think it's a really good appointment. I think he's shown that. I'm going to come across as a complete wimp today, but I watched a little bit of his first training session. I mean, he scares the living daylights out of me. He's my Alex Neil. For you, Matt, do you know what I mean? Like, it's so intense. Do you know what I mean? I watched about 2 minutes before I went to bed last night and had nightmares.
What was this on?
Just on the Charlton Twitter feed. Just a couple of minutes of him taking training. But I think he'll get a reaction out of him. I think he's flexible in his setups. The Luton were long ball. They were possession based. They played the diamond
midfield. Yeah, non-diamond. Yeah,
3-5-2. Like two up front at times. Well, invariably plays the two up front. So I think he's tactically really, really well switched on. Had a little look at the fixtures. Reading and Lincoln next two up. So not bad to kick off. And then Bolton, Portsmouth, Derby. So you got top three in consecutive games. So it's a really difficult start. And as Adrian says, defensively they are pretty woeful, aren't they? And pretty woeful against the teams in the top half as well. 8 points in 17 games against the better teams in the league. So he's going to have to improve, and he's going to have to improve them quickly, because they're playing the big boys in the first few weeks.
Yes, well, Port Vale looking for improvement too. They sacked manager Andy Crosby after less than a year in the job. They lost 1-0 at home to Leighton Orient on Tuesday. BBC Radio Stoke's Phil Bowers said the boos ring out around Vale Park, not just for tonight, but for what's happened over the last few days, which has caused so much aggro among Vale fans. I can only assume he's talking about the appointment of Robbie Williams as club president there. Sam, Gareth Ainsworth was the favourite last time I looked. That looks like a good fit for me, a fellow musician for Robbie to jam with.
Well, he played there, didn't he? And I suppose if you're looking for a club where he can replicate what he did at Wycombe Wanderers, there may be something in that. But, you know, I think it's a squad that are probably capable of playing more his style of football. Although it felt there was a bit of a sea change going on at Port Vale this season. I remember kind of like late summer being in the car and listening to Andy Crosby doing the rounds on like TalkSport and Five Live and what have you, because they won five out of the first seven games. And I remember him saying, I remember us talking about it, that the recruitment policy seemed to have changed. Rather than getting, you know, battle hardened League Two, League One players or players out the local non-league scene, they were actually looking at bedding in kind of academy graduates from the bigger clubs and younger players maybe from local parts of the region and the country. So I think it was a different strategy and it's maybe backfired a little bit. But I look at the squad, there's a lot of experience there. And I think more recently, looking at some of the numbers and looking at the January transfer window, they've lost a lot of players to injury. And also Alfie Devine, they had someone else whose name escapes me, but they've lost a couple of loanees, basically big loanees, and also a couple of big injuries, Ben Garrity being one of the main goal getters. So I think it's mitigating circumstances, but obviously it's been over a longer period, 3 wins in 21 now. So they're going to be in a scrap. And yeah, if Gareth Ainsworth wants to get back in, then this could be a decent fit for him.
Yep. I looked just before we came on, and he's second favourite now, Matt, to Mark Kennedy, who obviously did a pretty good job at Lincoln City. So that would be a decent appointment, I reckon. And another name maybe in the frame who's still unemployed, which I'm surprised about, is Mark Bonner. Obviously he did so well at Cambridge. Port Vale might be a nice fit for him as well. But my very quick take on Port Vale is that they just hadn't got enough out of their strikers this season. I think Garrity, who's injured, is more of an attacking midfielder. He's their top scorer. James Wilson, 4. Devine, who's gone, got 2. Massey, 1. Ikpeazu, 1. Ryan Loft, none. You know, the strikers haven't really stepped up to the mark this season for them.
All right, so any prospective manager going in for your interview this week, just say to the club president, let me entertain you, I guess, is the answer there. Absolutely flying with the terrible
music. I thought you were going down the Ryan Loft route there. Yeah. I thought you were just...
What a performance this is for MDA, eh? I mean, off the cuff lines. It's just outstandingly bad or good. I don't know.
Bad, I think. I was trying to shoehorn Angels in there somewhere, but more difficult than you'd think. Anyway, let's move on quickly and look ahead to some of the weekend's action instead. Right, Ipswich Town looking to bounce back after last weekend's defeat at Preston. They take on West Brom Saturday's early kickoff at Portman Road. What went wrong at Preston then, Sam? Because that was I say it was a surprise, but they've only won one of their last 8. So clearly this is a downturn for them, as we would expect.
Well, they don't start games particularly well, although recently they've been a bit better in that regard. There was a spell early part of the season when they were like conceding from the first shot, if you remember. So conceded the most goals in the opening 15 minutes of games, which is
12 of them.
Incredible stat, considering where they're sitting. I think only Leicester have scored more in the last 15 minutes. So they're obviously pretty good at coming from behind and taking points and scoring late in games. Mm. So they didn't start this game well. I think Plagge's having a little bit of a difficult period at the moment playing out. I think that was problematic. And Edmondson had a bit of a half to forget, which could be remedied with the return of Burgess, who I think is back from the Asia Cup. I think Australia are out there now. So he'll be returning like some other players across the championship. So he'll come back into the manager's thinking. They rallied second half, obviously, and the manager's got options in the front positions ahead of this game against West Brom. So I don't know. I just think a lot of this is down to Kieran McKenna now and his man management and his motivational skills. Can he turn them around now to go on another run when Southampton and Leeds are there now? And, you know, it's not a question of whether they're going to be able to maintain their form. They are. They're going to have to pick up an incredible amount of points to keep those two at bay. So I'm really enthused to see how they respond in, I think, it's a really difficult game against West Bromwich Albion. But I think it's important not to forget, this has been a hellish run for Ipswich. You know, we knew going into this period, this was a horrendous run of games. You know, the East Anglian Derby, Leeds, Leicester, you know, they've played them all over the last month. So they get past this one. If they can get a maximum, you know, return in this game, it's not over for them, but there does feel like there's a kind of sense of inevitability that the form of Southampton and Leeds is just too much.
Yeah, we'll see if Al Hamadi and Kiefer Moore get a start after coming off the bench last week. As for West Brom, Clarkie, they're only a place behind Ipswich, but they're a full 9 points back from them. Andy Vyman got a late winner against Birmingham last weekend. Had no idea Andy Vyman had gone to West Brom. There's always one of those, isn't there? Inconsistent of late, but Carlos Corberan probably more concerned ahead of this game about their away form. Three defeats on the spin without scoring. How are they going to rectify that this weekend?
Yeah, well, we saw Ipswich, you know, they were vulnerable, weren't they, to playing out from the back. They lost the ball in midfield for another one of their goals as well, where they sort of out-muscled. And you can catch them with power and pace in behind. We've seen that throughout the season, actually, and have got Daryl DK back as well, fit and available, who's pretty powerful himself. Obviously, Thomas Asante is another one that can run in beyond. So West Brom have the tools to hurt Ipswich. We saw it in the game at the Hawthorns, where they really suffocated Ipswich. I think Ipswich really did anything as an attacking force in that game. So they're going to have to come up with something different. McKenna against Corberan part two is going to be interesting. And I'd be fascinated to see what McKenna does. Surely he starts Kiefer Moore and, you know, the tactic, you know, moving forwards could be Leif Davis, hang it up to the far stick like he did in that second half.
Hey, Clarkie,
for Kiefer Moore.
Clarkie, if you were describing the perfect ball I'm a fullback for Kiefer Moore, that was it, wasn't it? Because that just stunk of, oh my goodness, the fullback and the goalkeeper are going to get mullered here. It was just perfect.
It did. I was that guy that came running down the left. That and in training you do it, and that's your stock cross, Matt. When you get to a byline and you've got a big centre forward, your stock cross is hang it up towards the far stick. You just know that big Sam Parkin's there or Kiefer Moore to smash it home and take the goalie with him. So, yeah. I mean, Leif Davis is on 11 assists. Kiefer Moore's arrival must give him belief that I'm about to get near 20, you know, come the end of the season. I mean, that's an obvious link up, isn't it? So, West Brom are going to have to stop the crosses coming in from the left. That is for sure.
All right. Bit more agricultural from the tractor boys, maybe then. It's not far from Rotherham to Leeds in terms of geography, but the gap between the pair in the table is much greater. Leeds at third, Rotherham are rock bottom ahead of this Yorkshire derby at Elland Road. I guess, Clarkie, that Rotherham will have been pleased to see Leeds taken to extra time and a long journey for them on Tuesday night. But there's one place you don't want to be going needing a result this season. It's Elland Road. They haven't lost there all term. I mean, can you make any kind of case for anything other than a comfortable home win here?
I just can't. I spoke to Liam Richardson afterwards. I felt bad, you know, because so all the questions were so negative. You know, you're 12 points from safety. Is there any hope? You know, and he's putting on a brave face. But yeah, I don't think they've got enough, Rotherham, unfortunately. You look at the back, it's a 5-4-1 at the moment, and it would absolutely be that again here. They won't have much of the ball. They might be lifted by the return of Cam Humphreys. He was fit enough to be on the bench the other day, and I know he's probably their best centre-back. So, and they look light on natural centre-backs, actually. Sean Morrison, kind of the only one really in that back five at the weekend. But yeah, they just don't really create. Rotherham haven't got a lot going for them apart from sort of the long throws, the free kicks, getting down the flanks and putting a cross in is their best form of attack. I was looking at some of the numbers. Their expected goals in open play is 5 worse than anyone else. They've had 59 fewer shots in open play than anybody else. And at the other end of the pitch, Victor Johansson's the busiest keeper. You know, I think everything really does point towards relegation, I'm afraid, this year for Rotherham United. And I think Leeds will win and probably win quite comfortably.
Yeah, top scorers for Rotherham are Hugh Gill and a Doffin. on three each. Sam, if I had to push you now to say who's going to finish at second out of Leeds and Southampton, are you saying that Southampton's current form trumps Leeds' squad depth and attacking talent, or do you think Leeds will get over the line?
I'm going nowhere near that question.
Oh, come on.
No interest.
Come on, Splinter, Sam.
Toss of a coin, innit? I think Clarkey, yeah, kind of echoed my sentiments earlier, I think, with what he said. You know, Southampton have got really good depth. I think they've got great options. I don't know if Leeds were really hindered by injury. I mean, maybe I'm contradicting myself when you see what they did last night, but I just felt maybe Southampton have a little bit more depth. But then, you know, Leeds have had that kind of problem at centre-half, and Ampadu's gone in there and been amazing. And then Gruev's come into midfield in the last few games and been incredible. So all of a sudden, they do have quite a few options. I suppose they're a bit more exciting. I think that was the line I liked from Clarkey in the attacking areas. Mm. You know, the front players are so explosive. James, Nonto, Somerville, and now he's got that nice kind of trio to rotate between in the front position. So I don't know. They're incredible at home. Like I said, all the kind of pieces of the jigsaw are finally available for Daniel Farker, and that wasn't the case early part of the season. I think I pinpointed the fullback areas quite often and didn't really like them there, and I don't think that's probably a valid argument now. So no, it's toe to toe, and I expect them to win here and win well. Yeah, I can't make any case for Rotherham. You look at the numbers, as Clarkey said, I think they conceded the most shots. I think the XG against is by far and away the worst. So they're in that position for a reason, and I'd expect Leeds to win to nil probably and rack up a few.
Last day of the season, Elm Road, Leeds United versus Southampton.
Leeds win that one. I'll give you that prediction. If it's all on that game, I'll go for Leeds there, mate.
Wow, that would be sensational, wouldn't it?
Let's hope that they're within a couple of points of each other when that one rolls around. Lincoln versus Fleetwood is the game we're going to look at in League One. The Imps mired in mid-table, which relegation-threatened Fleetwood would gladly take. Took Charlie Adam a while, Sam, to get his feet under the table, but back-to-back wins for them now against Port Vale and the midweek victory against Bristol Rovers.
Yeah, I'm kind of putting this down to a really good January and Charlie Adam as well, but I think that this just shows you how much difference a few savvy signings can make and what boost it can give to a side who clearly were in dire straits a few weeks ago. So yeah, Gavin Kilkenny on loan from Bournemouth, Elijah Campbell, from Everton, a centre-half, and Ronan Coughlin, or would that be Ronan Coughlin, considering how Graham has changed his identity over the last few years, from Waterford, where he's got an unbelievable goal-scoring record. So seeing him come in and getting two, I think, in consecutive games just shows you that he's got an eye for a goal. Not a young lad either, 27, I think. And it looks, looking at his statistics, that it maybe took him a little while to become so prolific in the Irish League. So this has been an incredible turnaround. It gives themselves a good opportunity. 7 goals in the last 3 games after 5 in their previous 11. So both sides of it, but particularly going forward, where I think they have got decent players. You know, Marriott's obviously left now, but Stockley, if you give him the service, will get you goals, as he showed last night at Bristol Rovers, a goal and an assist for him. So, yeah, good on Charlie Adam, basically, because I didn't foresee this happening, and they'll go to Lincoln with renewed confidence.
Yeah, and they'll fancy their chances as well, won't they, Clarkie? Not only because of their form. I know Lincoln had that much-needed win at Burton last weekend, particularly impressive given they played for an hour with 10 men, but they hadn't won in 9 before that, and they haven't scored more than once in a game since November. So first goal here could be crucial.
Definitely, yeah. But if Lincoln get it, you'd have to fancy them heavily to win the game, because they're defending brilliantly. A friend of mine went to the Peterborough game and was massively impressed by Lincoln's organisation. Said they gave pretty much the best attacking team in the division zilch. You know, they registered, you know, really low XG. They had hardly any efforts on goal. Lincoln was super organised and, you know, got quite a consistent back four under Michael Scubala. I believe Alex Mitchell, who was sent off against Burton, will be missing. So that's something they'll have to adapt to this weekend. But yeah, I mean, they drew 0-0 with Posh, 0-0 with Derby, and they beat Burton 1-0 with 10 men. So it's been a really good three games for them. And now the key is to unlock the attacking potential. I watched extended highlights of their game against Derby, and Taylor, you know, the kid on loan from Luton, absolutely roasted Derby's defence. I mean, he was blistering. Yeah, I think he probably took a bit off the value of Aaron Cashin. You know, such was the way that he got in behind, but he just couldn't score.
Look at Matt's face. Yeah. Value cash.
They should have cashed in on Aaron. That's what I was thinking, but I was going to have to discipline not to say it, but you teased me into it, Sam.
Never hold back, Matt. This is your thing, isn't it? But yeah... Lincoln are a tough nut to crack, is basically what I'm saying. And if they can crack the other end of the pitch, and I think they will, because Taylor and Draper are decent players, Danny Mandrew's coming back now, then they'll be all right, Lincoln. And they might even push towards the final playoff spot. We'll have to wait and see. But yeah, I think this is an interesting game.
Yeah, League One is just fascinating, isn't it? We seem to say that every season. In League Two, two of the heavyweights meeting in North Wales, Wrexham hosting Bradford, although that should probably be bantamweights, given that Bradford are involved. Adrian, I was going to say, what's gone wrong for Wrexham? Three defeats on the trot in all comps, but they were all away, and one was against Blackburn. So maybe actually not much has gone wrong, and they're a point off the top three.
Yeah, the supporters, I think, are a little bit frustrated with the performances in those away games. I think they feel... There's a feeling that maybe they didn't fancy it, and that they didn't roll up their sleeves and give as much as they sometimes do in the home games. Because this is a team of great character. You know, they've come back from unbelievable deficits, haven't they, this season and last season, to win games, to draw games, particularly at home. You know, they really do pile on the pressure. But yeah, that was lacking. There was a spark missing, I think, in the last couple of games. And some of the players' desire has been questioned. So I would expect a really fiery performance from Wrexham, of course, managed by Phil Parkinson, who has to go down as the greatest Bradford City manager in recent times, you know, for what he did there. So this is a big game between two huge clubs that are struggling in terms of current form. Sam will probably talk about Bradford's woes, but yeah, but Wrexham, there's not too much wrong, but they do need to bounce back. And I expect them to bounce back because at home, they've scored three or more goals 8 times this season. They've always scored at least 2. They are getting, you know, value for money down at the racecourse, aren't they? And I think, yeah, they've got to be heavy favourites to beat a really out of sorts Bradford.
Yeah, I'm beaten at home in the league since opening day, and they won their last 8 there as well. Bradford are having a shocking season, Sam. Down in 18th, no wins in 8. And this has got to go better for Graham Alexander, right? Because he keeps getting jobs and not doing particularly well in them, and that's going to run out soon if he doesn't reverse the form of the Bantams.
Yeah, there's definitely that, but there's the recurring theme that nobody can get this job right and team firing, although they went close last year, didn't they? Lost in the playoffs. Carlisle that beat them, wasn't it? Mm. And I remember us being, yeah, a little bit discouraged by their performance in the second leg when it was kind of there for them to go on and win. So I think there was some good work initially done by Mark Hughes. I think there's different formations and different game plans being kind of thrown out at the moment, which obviously frustrates. You can get away with it if you're winning games, but it just feels like Graham Alexander's still searching around at the moment to find his best team, not 1-8. I don't think Andy Cook has been anywhere near the force that he's been previously for Bradford. And it was interesting to see Jake Young involved in the last 3, obviously, very much like the Owen Doyle saga of a few years ago. Yeah. Talismanic for Swindon early part of this season. He's a good player, actually, and more than that, I really liked his personality. I heard a couple of his interviews when I'd done a couple of games down there, and yeah, really humble, but yeah, good detail in his answers. Just seemed like a really nice lad. So I hope he can turn...
Two up front, Young and Cook. I mean, you've got two really good strikers.
Possibly. I think it seems like Jamie Walker's absence has been felt quite hard as well. I don't think he's been available since before Christmas. So yeah, it's a tough spell for him. But like, you know, like a lot of clubs and a lot of clubs that change managers so frequently, they've just got to stick with him. Got to stick with him and hope that he can build something in the summer. There was one stat that I came across. I can't credit it to the chap because I didn't scribble his name down. But since 2021, 28 wins from 83 at home. That's five managers and four interim bosses they've had in that time. So, yeah, forget about what the home advantage should bring in League Two, because it's bringing zilch at the moment.
We'll see if it works in Wrexham's favour this weekend. All right, before we do a quiz to finish, a reminder of the offer from Quinbet. They've enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers at sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of the pod. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. Now, you can find us on Twitter at EFLWhatThe, at WhatTheEFL on TikTok and Instagram. And please do leave us a nice review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods. We'd appreciate it. All right, quiz time. A bonus point that doesn't actually count in the final shakeup, but it goes to you, Adrian Clark, for having the honesty to point out that I'd put the quiz and the answers into the Google Doc. So you could have just scammed your way to a 3-0 win. Had Sam not been paying attention, so I appreciate that. Let's see if it pays off for you here. First question, as ever, fastest finger first. Who is Ipswich's top scorer this season? Adrian?
Chaplin.
That is correct. Connor Chaplin with
what
9
What bad
goals.
Question.
Why?
Just absolute tapping without a goalkeeper. Penalty without a goalkeeper.
Oh, but still you didn't answer it in time. Interesting. Let's see if you can get this
Clarky
one.
Put his hand up after 0.01 seconds.
Wanted it more. Guilty.
Just desire, mate. It's just desire.
Which England team did Lincoln boss Michael Scubala used to manage? Ooh. Oh, wow. That was dead level. I'll give it to you, Sam.
Under 16s.
Nope.
Futsal.
Futsal is correct.
Well done, Clarky.
For the win. Do you think that was a harder question then, Sam? Did you?
Much harder.
Yeah, okay. Let's see what you think of this one, the final one. Is it going to be a whitewash for Clark? That will be karma paying off for the honesty. In what season did Phil Parkinson lead Bradford to Wembley twice?
by Swansea, didn't they?
In the League Cup final, yes.
I'll have a slap just because Clarky's playing with his chin. Yeah. I'll go with... got no idea, to be honest. Brendan Rodgers, yeah. Just going back away.
Wasn't Brendan Rodgers, it was Gary Monk.
Gary Monk. 2000, and I played against him in 2016-17.
That's before that.
Miles off it. Go on, Adrian.
Before that.
Gary Monk was the manager.
I'm sure he was. Yeah, Brendan was at Liverpool by this time.
I played against Gary Monk in summer 2013.
I'm going to say 2013.
Yeah, it was 2012-13. So it's a wow. Three. I mean, I'm going to give you the point there, Adrian, because the games at Wembley were in 2013. So that is absolutely...
Oh, well, that is what I meant, yeah.
Fine. It wasn't Brendan Rodgers and it wasn't Gary Monk.
That's void then, isn't it? Because you gave me Gary Monk before I gave you my answer.
Sam, it's 4-0. Deal with it, all right? Just dust yourself down like Danny Rowe had to. And come back next week and collapse again.
Who was the manager then for a bonus point, Sam? When Swansea won the League Cup. It was Michael Laudrup. Yeah. Seems weird now, doesn't it? Anyway, that will do it for this week's pod. Sam and Adrian providing the expertise as ever and a comprehensive victory in the quiz.
Destroyed him.
Some quiet reflection going on in the Parkin household this afternoon. Yeah. No doubt, must do better. All right, thanks for listening. Catch up with you again next week. Bye-bye.